Right, home from work. Walk the dog. Kids are back.
Mom!
Up the stairs for something. Ugh, back down. No idea what I went up for.
Mom, what's for dinner?
Chop. Sizzle. Done. HelloFresh can't slow life down, but it makes bringing everyone together around the table a whole lot easier. So it's phones down, forks up. HelloFresh. Bring back dinner time.
Welcome to Switched On Pop. I'm producer Rihanna Cruz.
I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
And I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
Nate, Charlie, there has been a seismic level event in pop music recently. Toronto singer, rapper, glutton for punishment, Drake, has released not one, not two, but three albums at the exact same time. Iceman, Habibti, and Maid of Honor.
Manish on a beat, shebang. All of my ops, they dead. Why do they gas me up? Where does it go? My head. How much I got? A lot. Don't leave again, I won't. Thinking and trying me, do like Bryson. Pussy ass nigga, don't.
That's the song Shebang off of Iceman. And those three records, they're Drake's first solo records since 2023's For All the Dogs. But more importantly, are also his first since his earth-shattering beef with Kendrick Lamar in 2024. And that informally ended with the drop of Kendrick's Grammy Award-winning track, Not Like Us.
Trying to strike a chord and it's probably A minor. They not like us. 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 You think the bay gon' let you disrespect Pop, nigga? I think that Oakland show gon' be your last stop, nigga.
I think it probably hurts when an entire stadium at the Super Bowl all collectively calls you a pedophile.
Yeah, I can imagine that bruised him a little bit.
Which leads to a very interesting question. Given that, I would say, the consensus is that Drake got absolutely bodied in this beef with Kendrick Lamar.
Correct.
How do you come back when you're going to release your first album following this much publicized fracas? What is your strategy going to be?
I like the word fracas, Nate. Never heard that before.
I didn't see it coming, and I hope I said it correctly.
Well, post-fracas, Drake fell off the musical map for a little bit. He stayed out of the main spotlight, aside from appearances on Twitch or whatever. He got very ingrained with the streamer community. It seemed like he retreated with his tail between his legs, which was probably for good reason. But nonetheless, over the past 2 years or so following the Kendrick debacle, we've gotten brief dispatches from Drakeland, including, but not limited to, there was an EP called 100 Gigs with songs like Circadian Rhythm.
How many quotes I wrote? How much gold I struck? Ay. How many funeral days they playing for me and I dodged it like the truck? Yeah. Rap game like my sleeping pattern, cause how the fuck I'm still up?
There was a single, Which One, featuring Central C, previously a Lucy, but now known to be on Maid of Honor.
Yeah, all the girls that's here for the shoot, come put two hands on a DJ booth and wind your waist on a real good youth. And you want Central, your ex, which one? You want friends of success, which one? Tell the sound man, spin this one, play this for the gal them party.
And there was also low-key my sleeper hit record of 2025, Drake's collab album with Party Next Door, Some Sexy Songs for You, which featured the mega hit Nokia.
Is it Stacy? Is it Becky? Is it Keisha? Is it MP? Was it Dante? Is it Party? Where's the function?
Where the fuck the function? Where the fuck the function?
I feel like Nokia was him dipping his toes back into the waters of mainstream culture outside of the hip hop community. Mm-hmm. It was a soft launch return to the spotlight to me. It was clearly super successful. The song went multiple times platinum, reached number two on a Hot 100. But again, that was a collab record. These three albums are his first solo efforts. We have three different vibes, 43 songs. I've done a lot of listening to these records for over a week now, and my overwhelming feeling is that we are now in an era of Drake slop.
Drake slop?
Let me explain. So the definition of slop I see in the modern age connotates a certain kind of low quality mass produced content. And I think that's exactly what these Drake records are. The quality aspect, kind of debatable. I think for objectivity's sake, it's maybe more low effort. But there's not much overt curation on these albums. He's mass producing music, much like the data dump of 100 gigs. He's just dumping whatever on the track, on these albums, in the sheer volume of the records. Again, 43 songs total. But also internally, he wants it to seem like it's low effort and he's not trying too hard. And in that, it's kind of just him spilling out his guts, not really going through an editor, whatever that may be.
So it's more like a triple mixtape than it is three different albums, if you will.
I kind of see it like that, yeah. I mean, for what it's worth, I think Drake has always needed to pare stuff down and always has flooded the market to maximize his streams or whatever.
Right.
But here he has a kind of no fucks given slop strategy that I think he's using to great effect to tell us something, right? Like, he's not really holding anything back on these three albums. And I find that kind of fascinating. So I want to look at select songs from each of these three records, Iceman, Habibti, and Maid of Honor, and try to figure out what is Drake saying here as he adapts to this new era of his career. How is the slop strategy paying off for him?
Rihanna, I'm excited, and I must warn you in advance, I'm going to have a lot of questions.
I'll try to answer. I'm not as ingrained in the Drake community as you may think I might be, but I'll try my best.
Fair. So, some of these may be just basic Gen Z literacy questions, but where do we begin, first of all?
Well, each of these albums have a different vibe. We got to go with the marquee record, the album Iceman. It's Drake's first personal statement post-beef. The big question on everyone's mind was, what are Drake's first solo words to the public going to be? We find them on the first track titled Make Them Cry.
I'm an only child, no one could have made another. I have to father my mother and treat my son's grandfather like my older brother. The skies are gray in Toronto, they not a golden color. I'm feeling like BTS, cause it took the whole career for me to be so discovered. I know for sure that
I believe he's commenting on the distance between himself and his father by describing him as his son's grandfather.
Thank you.
Essentially, you know, cementing this idea that he doesn't have a, you know, strong relationship with him. He has to treat him like a brother, not like a father figure. So that phrasing is meant to do exactly what you do and make you think through it.
I'm surprised you guys brought up those lines, because the one that I am more curious about that I can't really parse is the line, I'm feeling like BTS because it took the whole career for me to be so discovered. I'm really confused what he's trying to say.
I have a theory.
Okay.
I think he's saying soul discovered. Oh. Is that possible?
I'm feeling like BTS because it took the whole career for me to be so discovered.
Soul discovered. Whole career, he's kind of pronouncing it like Korea. Maybe he's trying to do some wordplay.
Is BTS just behind the scenes? He's taking us behind the curtain. Does it have a triple entendre?
But if it's Seoul, like the capital of Korea, then it kind of makes sense.
Right.
I mean, he's really, it's a bold stroke because, you know, this first track is like a very sparse kind of beat. His vocals are way out front.
Yeah.
It's giving this vibe like, I'm going to get real, you know, I'm going to be really honest and vulnerable. And he's taking some big swings, and some of them you're like, okay, I think that works, but maybe I'm thinking a little harder than I want to.
I am surprised that we are starting so close and then all of a sudden immediately going around the world and invoking another group. I'm curious how he's going to sort of bring it all together.
If any members of the ARMY, BTS's fan base, want to articulate the meaning of this line to me, feel free. I'm very curious as to what you think. But other than that, in these opening lines, you're right. Like, it is very personal. Drake's speaking about his family. He's addressing his parents. He is addressing directly his son, Adonis, who famously was a point of contention in his previous beef with Pusha T. He's laying it all out right in front of us. It's an intimate song off the bat. It feels like you're sitting down for a conversation with Drake, talking to you like a friend. But it also establishes something up front in these lines. It's pretty clear that he's giving this album, Iceman in total, a lyrical slant, and also communicating by referencing his family and his kid. Nothing is off limits. Like, he's not being cagey by any means. And that becomes more and more clear the further the song goes, because Drake just starts to kind of let it rip lyrically.
What died back in 2024 was a big piece. So it's like the shit is me, but it isn't me. Y'all keep on asking me what it did to me. That's what it did to me. When I dig deep, they say dig deeper. Tell us how it felt to meet the Grim Reaper. This album better have some big features. Well, sorry to burst your bubble, but I'm all alone for my mental.
I feel like this line where it's acknowledged that he lost this rap battle, died, basically. He's asking, you know, how did it make me feel? Well, it made him feel like I can kind of transcend it. I can flip the beat. I'm going to just keep on moving. And I think it also emphasizes what you put out at the beginning, which is, now, I think slop is maybe a little bit not totally generous, but it's kind of like, I'm going to do this effortlessly. Like, I'm just going to keep on going.
Yeah, I do think there's a level of self-awareness that is present on this song that maybe has been a little bit obscured in previous Drake eras. Like, right off the bat, he mentions 2024. He recognizes the looming storm over this whole record. Already kind of seems to go on the defense. You know, like, he tries to nonchalantly deflect with the statement, that shit is me, but it isn't me.
And then we get this beat switch, which kind of comes out of nowhere. Can we hear that again, Rihanna?
Well, sorry to burst your bubble, but I'm all alone for my mental. And I've been trying to end so many people, I almost forgot the intro. Been so sure of my words that I haven't used a pencil. Been so paranoid that nothing in this world seems coincidental.
Goes halftime.
It's like he's turning the page on that moment. Literally with the music switching up, it's like, okay, I addressed it. Now let's leave it behind. I'm on my own, and I'm literally going to give a, like, usher in this new moment through this beat switch. That's one interpretation, at least.
I could see where you get that impression, but I think there's something different happening here. Mm-hmm. I think Drake is trying to appear unbothered, but is most certainly not unbothered by the whole situation. In fact, he is extremely bothered by what happened with Kendrick. This is not a new attitude from Drake by any means. During the beef, you know, he seemed pretty agitated, juxtaposed with Kendrick's attitude of effortless trolling that we heard on tracks like Not Like Us. But it's clear what Iceman is supposed to be in this moment and this song writ large. It feels like Drake is using this album as a chance to kind of clear his throat about the whole affair. And while those lines are attempted nonchalance, this album establishes where Drake is at mentally. And that state is pretty petty. It's vindictive. Even the title, Make Them Cry, on this song, it's clear what the intention is. It's not about him. It's about them and what he wants them to feel.
Yeah, he doesn't keep it on his chest. He goes on to rap about, you know, trying to talk to his therapist, and he's getting so real, but he can only get so real because he's too attracted to his therapist, which is like a really embarrassing admission.
It's very Tony Soprano.
Yeah, he can only be so truthful even to the person that he's supposed to be most truthful to, because he, you know, he thinks from his pants.
He's very driven by the id.
Niggas want to talk about a battle. I'm battling patience. Nigga, I battle frustration. I'm about to turn 40, dog. I'm battling aging. I'm battling the fact that the album ain't even dropping. Already they ass is complaining. Fuck it, I'll battle the label. Fuck it, I'll battle the majors. I'll battle the stations till my ass is back in rotation. Shout out to the real fans that knew what I had.
Bro is miffed. He's outwardly miffed. Yep. He's miffed at people bringing up the beef in the first place. He's miffed at his fans. He's miffed at the radio and record labels for what he feels is slighting him. He feels like he had something to prove.
I mean, as someone who just turned 40, I do find this, some of this relatable.
Compelling. On one hand, you know, I'm happy that Drake is hungry again. I think that's been missing from his work for a while. I think he's gotten too comfortable and now he's on the defense. So I appreciate the lyrical dexterity here. But I do think the angle that he's taking comes off as a little bit tryhard and a little bit lazy. I wonder what the album would be if he took your approach, Nate, of kind of letting it slide and moving into new lyrical territory. Most of Iceman expands on this idea of pettiness is practice. And of the three records, I think it's the weakest as a result. Going back to the slop idea of like mass-produced, unedited, lowest common denominator music, kind of just taking low blows. There's shots on most of these songs. There's notable lines on the song Janice, STFU.
White kids listen to you because they feel some guilt, and that's how your soul gets fulfilled. Handing out turkeys on camera inside of your hood, then you go back to the hills. How many houses you build? How many souls did you heal off the back of your deal? Difference between niggas getting you out of your deal and letting you out of your deal.
There's also the track Make Them Pay, which kind of goes scorched earth towards a lot of people. DJ Khaled gets beef. Rick Ross gets beef. It recalls the original lines that started this beef back in 2023 when Drake was talking about the idea of a big three, and Kendrick called that out on Like That.
Fuck a big three anyway. There was too many chefs in the kitchen. It was a mess to begin with. And now they got a new gold and we gotta test the position. Damn, who is this guy for real? I guess a magician. 100 million streams vanished. No one got questions for niggas.
If I have my facts right, it was J. Cole who initially rapped about
so
the
true,
big
Nate.
Three, to which Kendrick replied, fuck a big three, there's only big me, or something along those lines. But you're absolutely right. That is a reference to the initial start of that whole saga.
So these lines are on nearly every song. But there are a couple tracks on Iceman that go about this vindictiveness in a way that's a step beyond lyrical diary dumping. One of the songs to take off has been the track Brand to Atlanta featuring Future and Molly Santana. There's a few layers to this song. In Not Like Us, the final nail in the coffin was a verse from Kendrick Lamar where he methodically outlined all of Drake's culture vulturing from different parts of the black diaspora revolving around a killer bar about Drake's relationship with Atlanta.
But 2 Chainz say you good, but he lied. You run to Atlanta when you need a few dollars. No, you're not a colleague. You're a fucking colonizer.
Lethal. So Drake has responded with the song Ran to Atlanta.
It's a trap track, naturally.
Outside is back to what it was, you know what I'm saying? Atlanta, tell you about my run, you know what I'm saying? Ask Pluto Bank of 21, you know what I'm saying? I done put up half, what's done is done, you know what I'm saying?
Drake makes a trap song, names it Ran to Atlanta, which is already extra enough. But then he takes it further and gets Future on the track.
Yeah.
Mind you, this is the same man that Kendrick name drops in Not Like Us and is the same guy that was an architect of the beef in the first place, because Future and Metro Boomin's song Like That had the original anti-Drake Kendrick feature back in 2024.
Think I won't drop the location. I still got PTSD. Motherfuck the big three. Nigga, it's just big me. Nigga, boom.
Wow, the lore is deep.
It's loaded. And granted, Drake and Future have collaborated before together on numerous occasions. They have the 2015 mixtape What a Time to Be Alive. But bringing Future back into the fold is kind of a distinct jab.
Can't even tell you what day it is. She pulled it right out of purse and she planned it. Note on the sheet and she landed. Bought a condo up the street and she standing. Bring out the freaks to France. And the Sprinter, they want to play Miley Santana. Used to cook hand on my tan. The way we were boxing, you think we went hand in hand.
So you have Molly, you have Future, you have Drake. Kind of dream team. But again, the music is not enough for Drake. He needs to go over the top and deliver more pointed lines.
Iceman turn, like we knew that the tables were. Iceman back outside for the greater good. Fuck you, pussy, but shout out your neighborhood. I get mentioned a lot by a bunch of people that I wish I never met. We sharing women that I already fucked at the height of my success.
Lots happening.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, bro is upset. And also, something that we haven't talked about yet is the name Iceman. I mean, what is cooler and more collected, this is sarcasm, than developing a fake superhero alter ego to demonstrate how unbothered you are and then talking about it for 18 straight songs?
I have to say, I don't love how many times he says the word ice on this album in general. I just don't like hearing it. Frankly,
not the time
in this day and age. It's just like, think of another metaphor.
Yeah, I feel kind of weird about Drake identifying himself as Iceman.
Very insensitive,
you know, in this very politically charged time when ice is literally stealing people off the streets.
Yeah,
in Los Angeles, where Kendrick Lamar is from. Don't really love those optics.
I have one of the questions that I promised earlier, because I'm a little hung up on the album art for Iceman.
We didn't even mention that.
Yeah, it's a bedazzled glove that seems to clearly be referencing Michael Jackson. It's like kind of a blurry photo of a gloved hand against a black background. What does that mean? I'm so perplexed by it.
I mean, I think you said it yourself. I think he's trying to draw connections between himself and Michael Jackson, maybe because the media persecuted both of them.
Wow, that's crazy.
But there's also a line on like that Kendrick Lamar says that I'm recalling now, where he says Prince outlived Mike Jack, referring to Kendrick Lamar as Prince and referring to Drake as the Michael Jackson. Okay. So maybe it's referencing that. Maybe it's referencing the public perception of Michael Jackson. I am not really sure. Again, the messaging around this album I find very cloudy and not super thought through.
Kendrick used the line, you know, A minor.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very off-color thing to say, I'm going to compare myself to someone who has many allegations of sexual abuse against children.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm stunned that anyone would choose to be, I have been compared to that person in that same way. Very strange choice.
There's another song on the album that responds to the beef musically, and that's the track Too Hard for the Radio.
Hey, first off, I make real time smags. Boy, you know the model gotta push it to the mat. Back when they was asking about where Davidson was at, now everybody got a blue 30 on their bag. Must have heard about us, gotta catch up to the slaps. Yeah, yeah, it was me and YG rap. Fags, 900 million for the tracks.
Brianna, did I hear something about some condiments?
You heard a reference to Capital M Mustard, the DJ who produced Not Like Us and is also boys with Kendrick. It's pretty clear here on Too Hard for the Radio, Drake is trying to do a California rap thing. He's intentionally aping the styles that Kendrick Lamar, who again is from California, deals in. Mm. Kendrick's last album, GNX, released on the heels of this beef, was very indebted to this sound. And this track, Too Hard for the Radio, is even produced by the artist P-Lo, who has crafted the California Bay Area sound on songs like Word is Bond by YG, who was also mentioned in these lyrics.
If I told you I was back, nigga, that's what it is. I run the left side of the map and that's what it is. My homie got that pack and that's what it is. If you ain't trying to spend a high buy, cause that's what it is.
This is getting very conspiratorial.
I know. I might have my tinfoil hat on a little bit, but I do think...
No. You're in the music.
I do think it's intentional, though, because there's lines in Too Hard for the Radio that straight up call out Oakland.
Boy, Nike shoes. I got a mic to use to talk bad about you pussies. I don't like you fools. Got an Oakland show tonight, baby. My young boy's front of yacht going crazy.
It's both the call out to the Bay and the sound, but also, again, he's not unbothered. He references Not Like Us and the line where Kendrick says that Oakland show gonna be your last stop.
I think there's a bigger issue here, which is that Drake is not too hard for the radio.
No way.
Quite the opposite, in fact.
It's a fundamentally false promise that, as you pointed out, Rihanna, he even sort of negates on that first track we listened to, Make Them Cry. You know, he's talking about his need to produce hits. So there's like some kind of crisis of identity crisis, I think, happening here, which is kind of fascinating. And it produces what we academics like to call a rich text. There's a lot to unpack here.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the statement Too Hard for Radio is an interpolation. It's a reference to the hyphy rapper Mac Dre and his song Too Hard for the Fucking Radio. And it's a direct interpolation.
And he's an Oakland rapper as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Let me play the two.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And here's Drake's version.
Yeah, it's Mr. Popstar, that's a way to go. Now I'm too hard for the fucking radio.
I'm not buying it, but I don't know. I'm also intrigued by just the sheer slop of it. Like, there's so much here. It gives you a lot to chew on as a listener, at the very least.
Another thing they have in common is that in the original, he talks about he's going to be rapping till he's 80. And I have no doubt that we are going to be getting some like 12 album drop when Drake turns 80. He's turning 40 right now. So I think the oeuvre of Drake is only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. There's hyperinflation in the Drake economy.
The oeuvre? The oeuvre, I think, is what you meant to say, Charlie.
I did not pass high school French.
Dell PCs with Intel inside are built for the moments you plan. And the ones you don't. For the time you forgot your charger at the gate.
Passengers, we are now on our initial ascent.
Or when you're bouncing between projects like a ping pong ball. We build PCs with long-lasting battery life so you're not scrambling for a charger. And built-in intelligence so you can stay focused on whatever you're doing. Dell Technologies. Built for you. Dell.co.uk/Dell PCs.
Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Where will your career take you? At PwC, we're shaping the future together. Driven by our values, we collaborate to tackle important problems and create meaningful change at a global level. Here, we do more than build world-class skills. We nurture your potential. By asking bold questions and using technology in new ways, your growth becomes our client's advantage. So you can do inspiring work. So you can grow here and go further. Search PwC UK Careers today.
So ultimately, you know, the question is, beyond being petty 10 toes down, what is Drake trying to say with Iceman? I'm kind of getting mixed messages. When you hear Iceman, you think about someone who literally doesn't get heated, who's able to dodge the bullets, so to speak, yeah. Has the ability to easily cool off. And instead of getting that record, which I could imagine would be a little bit bespoke, we have just a nonstop airing of Drake's grievances and beef. And this, to me, has never been Drake's strong suit. I don't like Drake when he gets into this dark and vindictive mood. I feel like it bogs him down. It doesn't let the joy and fun of his work shine. Mm. Only when he was going after Meek Mill on songs like Back to Back do we get vicious lyrics and clarity on the same time. What he refers to as his Iceman thing, when he's in that mode, the power of Drake gets lost.
Yeah,
I think Drake is trying to say one thing, but instead saying another, and it leaves him in a weird in-between place. And in a different world, when this is the only album, it would be kind of hard to tell where he goes from there. The good thing, though, is that there are two more records not named Iceman that are so much less heavy because they actually say new and exciting things about Drake himself. The record Habib T is less risky than Iceman. It's also less risky than Maid of Honor, which we'll get to in a little bit. Mm. But it also has still a distinct sound and purpose. All three of the albums have different sonic vibes that Drake is trying to put out. You know, Iceman is the rap record. Habib T is the R&B record. It's more R&B coded. And I think Drake on this album is trying to be less lyrical and more musical. At the same time, he's trying to take us out of the present and connect us back to previous eras of Drake, as well as a larger canon of musical context to rehabilitate his image. And I think the two of you will be pleased with the intro of Habib T, the track Rusty intro.
Okay.
To all the sweethearts and the dates I've had, I wonder what they'll say about me. How would they describe me as a man? I know I'm no angel, but I try. And God made me with a left hand. I cannot do everything right.
So can we declare bingo? I mean, it's not twang, but that is Americana. I think Drake went country.
I was going to say, do I dare to say that Drake finally goes country?
Wow.
We predicted it at the beginning of the year on our annual bingo episode. Wow.
The moment has come. I would feel better if there was like a little fiddle or banjo in there, but yeah. Given how country has basically become hip hop, this feels like Drake's version of country. So, yeah.
It reminds me a little bit of almost like 4 or 5 seconds, the Rihanna, Kanye, Paul McCartney track.
Now I'm 4 or 5 seconds from wildin', and we got 3 more days till Friday.
More acoustic guitar Americana than it is actual Nashville country, but I'm going to give it to him.
I think there's a lot of country elements in here. It's immediately a pivot from the in-your-face brashness of Iceman.
Totally.
He's mentioning lyrics about his sweethearts. There's mentions of God and angels, even the title of the song Rusty Intro. Rust, big country music metaphor,
Rust.
I think.
Yep.
All of these are lyrical references, and there's a guitar instrumental. And in a great review of the song by Alphonse Pierre for Pitchfork, he makes the point that this track aligns itself with pain rap.
Pain rap? Is that like when you touch the rust and then you get tetanus and you need to get a shot, you do pain rap?
And then you rap about how sad and emo you are and how much you're hurting and how much ladies have broken your heart and left you to the wayside. Like country music and pain rap are shaking hands. And as Alphonse says in his review, Morgan Wallen does pain rap as well. And with the blurring genre lines of country music and rap music, I think this is a country song.
Wow. He's done it.
He has done it, but it's not super straightforward. I mean, there's the auto-tuned vocal, and in the back half of the track, the form breaks, and it sounds like nothing else on these three albums. So,
act like you're an angel, I don't see no halo.
DJ Frisco 954.
Yo.
Tell the bartender, fuck it, give me everything you have. I'm on an orange full moon right now, so I don't.
Whoa.
This DJ tag comes in, stuttering, the beat repeats over and over, the whole vibe changes, the vocals even sound a little bit sped up, maybe trying to reverse engineer or mimic a TikTok moment. Kind of baffling to me.
Feels unfinished, though.
Mm.
I mean, to your point, it's kind of sloppy.
Yeah, it feels like a demo. You know, he kind of chopped it up a little bit in Ableton or whatever and just kind of threw it out there.
Where does he go from here, Rihanna?
Well, unfortunately, Rusty Intro is the most interesting song on the record by far.
Okay.
But in the other tracks on Habib T, we get this idea of Drake trying to connect himself and this era to previous Drake eras to maybe remind us of what we loved about him prior to all this drama. The track High Fives, by and large, feels like first draft Drake. And I mean that derogatorily. Take this line that I haven't stopped thinking about since I heard it.
If I'm drinking, peach Bellini, they so pressed about the beat, it's panini. Just like Pierre said, baby, come and see me. She a genie, see me, sheeny. Wear my diamond glove, they can never see me.
Whoa.
Rhyming peach Bellini with Sydney Sweeney is nasty work.
Which follows pressed panini, which is nice. You know, we haven't had another panini since the Lil Nas X song, so that's interesting.
And there's also another reference to the diamond glove. So, yeah, he's really on this MJ tip, which is, as we discussed, you know, maybe not the most savory connection. It feels like he's throwing a lot of spaghetti against the wall with this one.
Sloppy spaghetti? Sorry.
You're incorrigible.
But High Fives musically is founded on the sample of Reverse the Lyrics. And I think it's intentionally trying to evoke, whether it's the same sample or not, the vibe of the first track on Drake's 2013 record, Nothing Was the Same, the song Tuscan Leather. Here's the beat of Tuscan Leather.
Chipmunk Soul. The first.
And here's what he's got going on High Fives.
Fuck yes. What ripper for the game.
So it's the same sped up Chipmunk Soul kind of thing where the vocals are super high pitched, but then also reversed.
Yeah, and maybe it's a coincidence. You know, it's not super novel to reverse sped up soul vocals. But I do think it's Drake maybe intentionally trying to remind us as fans who may have strayed from Drake's light to recall the hits and remember why we may have liked him in the first place. And Tuscan Leather is regarded as one of Drake's best songs. So I don't think it's an accident that these tracks sound similar.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give it to him. On this album and throughout his entire discography, he works with great producers who know their stuff. Like, maybe part of the reason why Kendrick accuses him of culture vulturism is that it's true. Drake travels around the world and works with producers that know how to evoke different feelings and vibes. It's very rarely do I think it's entirely accidental.
On this album, Habibti, Drake is also trying to do something else, as I mentioned, which is connect to a larger canon of musical context. One of Drake's problems when it comes to pop, R&B, and rap, it's hard to identify him with one particular genre, which goes back to the mission of these albums. It's to establish himself in each of these apartments. Iceman's the rap album, Habibti is the R&B album, Maid of Honor's the pop album. And whether or not I agree with the approach, I do think he's actively trying to become not just a jack of all trades, master of none, but a master of all. And Habibti is the music-focused, R&B-oriented album. And I find the song Classic to be the record's mission statement in that vein by throwing it back to previous eras of R&B.
Hey. I heard once upon a time that you and, well, girl, you know what, never mind.
Sultry.
It's cool. I dig it.
Very 90s, very 2000s. There's the nod to Pharrell with the four count instrumental, twinkling synth pads here, smooth vocals, blown out 808s as if it's coming through like a car speaker or something. And the narrative he immediately starts off is like, talking to a girl, you know, he heard some rumors. It's very Usher Confessions vibe. This is smooth, suave Casanova character Drake. If Iceman is a character, this is another character.
My issue here is that I have a problem with this romantic Drake, though.
Mm.
Though I really enjoy his melodies, I actually really like his vocal approach. I think that his vision of female pleasure is what a 17-year-old boy imagines. And I can't speak for all people and their desires, but I actually think he's singing more from imagined male adolescent ideas of sexuality than a like grown-up man.
I completely agree. And maybe Drake hedges those complaints by having this track, Classic, function as two halves, where the first half is him singing, doing his R&B thing. And then the back half is actually an extensive sample of the already existing 90s R&B track, Don't Beat Around the Bush by Just Cause.
Here we lay, all alone, for the first time, baby.
Is this your first time?
Yeah. That you won't give your love to me. You're giving me.
Once again, I don't understand why Drake is bringing up like youth and sexuality after his accusations from Kendrick. Massive cognitive dissonance here. Like, he opens the album being like, I'm 40 or I'm nearly 40. Like, why are we going back to teenage romance?
Maybe it's connected to, you know, what Rihanna was saying at the very beginning of this conversation. Flood the zone, right? That's the playbook. That's the slop aesthetic. Just put so much stuff out there. Some of it good, some of it controversial, some of it negative.
Yeah.
It overwhelms you in a way.
Sure.
I was going to draw a connection to another Drake track, which is a little bit ironic considering what you just said, Charlie. But I was going to say this song reminds me of Drake's song Teenage Fever on More Life, because that song uses an extensive sample of J-Lo for that track's hook. So this is something that he's done before.
Good sample.
It's a really good sample.
Good beat.
One of the best Drake songs, maybe ever.
Hmm.
So the Classic sample is doing two separate things, both in the realm of kind of musically rehabilitating his image. For one, he's directly connecting himself to vintage R&B. There is an element to it where the band Just Cause, I gather, is pretty obscure. So I wonder if he's trying to infuse his image with a little bit of curatorial taste to lend him a little bit more credibility.
Right.
But more than that, and this is going off of the Teenage Fever connection, I think he's trying to put himself in conversation with what we know to be old Drake. We see it on High Fives. We see it on Classic. And we've been seeing this a lot from rappers of Drake's class as they enter the third decade of their career. I'm thinking of Kanye West's I Love Kanye, I Miss the Old Kanye dialogue on Life of Pablo. Like, these rappers, as they age and they're going into an era where they're scared of losing their relevance, it feels like the only thing that they know how to do is call back what they were doing 10 years ago and be like, remember that? You love that shit.
Yeah. It's hard to be an aging pop star. Pop stardom is often a young person's game, and hip hop moves, I think, often faster through its stars than other genres.
But the thing is, Drake is a pop star.
Yes, he is.
As well as a hip hop star, as well as an R&B star. And this leads me into the final record of the three. What really excites me about Drake is when he pushes the boundaries, tries new stuff. That's why Nokia was so good. That's why I loved Rusty Intro on Habibti. And Maid of Honor, the third album, takes a whole different approach to anything else we've heard today. It's a pop record. It's the riskiest of the three. And if I press play on the song Cheetah Print featuring Sexy Red, you get the vibe right away. This is Song of the Summer, by the way.
All right. You heard it here first.
First thing, can I get consent? I am a gentleman. Girl, your face an 8 and your ass is a 10. Girl, what's in that drink? It tastes
Drake
like
is back in the club, and thank God.
I'm thinking of what you said earlier, Ryan. If you described him as pure id, this is even more like primal. This is like lizard brain. Smack it. You know, this is just... this is elemental horniness right here in a way that is I feel more comfortable with, honestly, than some of the other things we've heard.
Totally.
I'm sorry to take it there, but I'm very glad that he asks for consent at the beginning, because this song is a straight up reference to Planet Rock. It's the electro style. It's got the vocoder.
Yeah.
Afrika Bambaataa, another person with a lot of allegations of predation. And so trying to flip that narrative around and still use that sound.
I do think it sounds like Planet Rock, but Planet Rock isn't the only electro song. You know, I think he's like trying to just get people dancing in the club by throwing it back to these old vintage house and techno aesthetics.
For sure. And it's a style of music that is foundational to hip hop. It's really the place where hip hop fit in the club from the very beginning. It's party music. It is fun music. This is definitely much more of a move towards pop and dance culture.
What stands out to me is his sample of the DJ Peggy Goo's song, It Goes Like Na Na Na. That's been a staple of dance music sets since it dropped a few years ago, kind of went platinum in the gay clubs. I think he's pandering in a way, but I'm not mad at it. And you can hear him having fun a little bit on the other side of the microphone. Like, I kind of adore this song.
Smack that ass until I leave a print. Smack that ass. Smack that ass until it's cheetah print. I smack that ass. Smack that ass until I leave a print. I smack that ass. Smack that ass until it's cheetah print. Damn.
Cheetah Print is party music, and you could really, really tell when Sexy Red gets involved.
Orc 5!
There's the orc hit.
Clap with no hands. Aight, we gonna start the basic step, ladies. Nice and slow. To the left. To the right.
Got the cha-cha slide.
Throw it back now, y'all. One cheek this time.
Come on, who thinks of this stuff? Who thinks of cha-cha slide interpolation recounted by Sexy Red?
Shout out to the Fairlight CMI Orc 5 sample.
Staple sound of all electro music.
Stravinsky, Firebird Suite.
Clap with no hands. Aight,
the energy just builds and builds and reflects a core truth about Drake, something that Kendrick Lamar has said, and what we all kind of know as pop fans since the Take Care era. Drake's best work has been in the pop space. His best songs are songs that people could pop ass to. He's super comfortable. And there's something about Sexy Red in the past few years that has brought this energy out of him. The two of them work really well together. And she's featured on Habibti, but I specifically think of 2023's track Rich Baby Daddy, featuring SZA as well, that I see as kind of the older sibling to Cheetah Print. There's spiritual similarities here. I mean, Sexy Red on Rich Baby Daddy is also giving instructional ass moves to the audience. But, you know, for the record, Rich Baby Daddy is the most popular song off of that album for all the dogs. So something is working.
Instructional ass moves. I'm proposing that as an alternate title of this this episode.
I know you guys want an out to stop talking about Cheetah Print. So another favorite of mine off of Maid of Honor is the song BBW. It is a slow build, simmering R&B pop hybrid for most of it. It starts off with Drake over these dark Moog-esque synths.
Big girl, I will show you what I made of. I can handle it if you could take it. Come closer, I'm not afraid. We both know my type is okay. I'm gonna need no bed if you're jumping on me like that.
As it goes on, the percussion comes in slowly, layer by layer, and it feels like you're walking into the club, like it's coming through the walls. It just builds and builds in a really satisfying way.
The production is sultry. His vocal is as well. Lyrically, again, I think he gets into like teenage boydom on this song. There is a lyric, just because your body ain't PG rated, so much ass, you should be cremated. I'm like, who is that for? Who is he enticing with that?
And what does it mean? What does it mean? Seriously, what does that mean?
Just cause your body ain't PG rated, so much ass you should be cremated. How do you expect me to be so patient, my girl?
Is it like ash? Like ass? Is he trying to make a connection there?
Oh, see, that's cremation. Good.
I mean, I think it might be that you wouldn't fit into a casket.
Mm.
Am I making
wow.
sense here?
Wow, Charlie, the dark horse.
Wow, I like that.
Right?
That's definitely what
yeah,
it means.
I think 100%.
That's it.
What a strange way to demonstrate your appreciation. Again, this is a grown man. He's 40 years old. I'm not buying
almost
it.
40, Charlie.
But
almost
wouldn't
40.
You say the same about Fat Bottom Girls, like by Queen? Like, it's the same energy.
You got fat bottom girls, you make the rockin' world go round. Fat bottom girls, you make the rockin' world go round.
Totally. It's the song as a standalone is one thing. The entirety of Drake as he's presenting himself is giving me this impression. But the song is romantic. It's really in contrast to all of the other ways that he's expressing his own desire that feels very juvenile to me. The image of Drake that I know is discordant with how he wants to present.
I mean, in his defense, he's like you said earlier, Charlie, he's in a tough spot. And as Rihanna said, he has to play the hits. He has to continue that persona, even if it's not authentic anymore, because what is he going to do, you know, as
grow up?
Well, as Andre 3000, you know, famously said a few years ago, what am I going to do, rap about my colonoscopies? Like, it's a tough position to be in. How do you maintain your relevance while reaching out to, you know, younger fans? I don't have an answer, but I can also appreciate it's not this necessarily.
On your point about what is authentic to Drake, I would maybe argue that this is him at his most authentic. I think he's kind of trapped in the constraints of what being a popular rapper in 2026 allows for. Like, he can't really get silly. I can't see a song like BBW or Cheetah Print existing on a normal Drake album, you know, because I think he feels a little bit constricted in what he has to do. And that's why Iceman to me felt a little laborious, because it seemed like he felt a need to clear his throat, not necessarily a want. On Maid of Honor, I think he's just having fun and letting loose. And that to me feels like the most authentic version of Drake. On BBW, the back half of the track I keep thinking about because it's so bonkers, genuinely.
Put your back in it. What you waiting for? Put your back in it.
More Orc 5.
What you waiting for? Put your back
Wait,
in it.
This is great. What you waiting so for? That is the Apple voice that you can get a Mac to talk to you. You can actually do this on an Apple computer still today.
Put your back in it. What you waiting for?
There
All
it
right.
is. All right, someone add that to the genius.com lyrical annotations.
But can your text speech do waiting this?
Put your back in it. What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Put your back in it.
No, my accessibility mode on my computer does not make hot beats like that. That is a fire outro, though.
Drake is doing baile funk dance music. There's a sample of work by Denise Belfon on here. I've kind of been on this tip for a little bit that Brazilian funk music, which is different than American funk music, you know, Parliament, George Clinton, as we know it, is the next wave in dance music and hip hop music. And again, going back to Drake's slop strategy, he's kind of just throwing shit at the wall. But at the same time, he will still be able to tap into something that is a little bit ahead of the curve. But the song I want to leave us on today is coincidentally the last song on Maid of Honor. We've already had something akin to Drake Goes Country with Rusty intro earlier. But would you believe me if I said that on the song Princess, Drake goes shoegaze?
Ooh.
First time I saw ya.
Wow.
You wouldn't give me time of day. Now that I know ya, I probably should have walked away.
I found my princess laying in a bathroom, laying in a bathroom. She got too lit.
Okay, maybe shoegaze is a stretch, but this is kind of noise rocky. There's pop punk melodies. It's radically different than any other Drake track we've heard in general, especially in this very drop.
I feel like A$AP Rocky did it a few months ago on Punk Rocky.
I thought I fell in love. I thought she felt it too. I thought we was in love. She just another fluke. I thought you was the one. I guess you just the two. You want the last laugh, but now the joke's on you.
And, you know, to get conspiratorial, both been in Rihanna's orbit.
I didn't even think of that, Charlie. That's really smart.
It's working for me. Returning to our earlier conversation, you know, maybe this is actually a path forward for Drake to move into genres that allow him to be a little more emo, wear his heart on his sleeve without having to constantly remind us that he's too hard for radio. Maybe that's the next step for Drake, to get in touch with his sensitive side, not only lyrically, but musically. Emo Drake.
Hold on, we're going home.
Exactly. Hold on, we're going home. Find Your Lovin'. These are some of the best Drake songs and are emo tracks.
I better find your lovin'. I better find your heart. I better find it all.
You know, when you really strip away all of the glitz and glamour, like, he's in pain. He's whining on those songs. And that's where, historically, Drake has found the most critical success, the most fans. I do see this, as you said, Nate, as a path forward into the future of Drake. And I think ultimately, through these three records, we get a pretty good and clear picture of who Drake is and what he wants to sound like. Iceman feels like a slog to me because it's him indulging maybe his worst instincts, you know, his pettiness mostly. But Habibti has some good moments, and Maid of Honor is a standout to me. And while Drake is dumping whatever out into the world and flooding the market with Drake's slop, maybe there's glimmers of diamonds in the Drake slop, to throw some imagery out there. And what I will say is that I'll take slop from someone who continues to surprise me over boring, mediocre slop any day.
Switched on Pop is produced by Rana Cruz, edited by Lissa Soap, engineered by Brand McFarlane, illustrations by Iris Gottlieb, video by Nick Rips. Our theme music is by Jossie Adams and Zach Tenari of Arc Iris. Remember, for the Vox Media Podcast Network production of Vulture, which is part of New York Mag, and subscribe at nymag.com/pod.
Tell us what diamonds you have unearthed in the avalanche of Drake slop at Switch on Pop on Instagram, TikTok, and all the other social media things. We want to know what you're hearing in this album, so come talk to us and that's it.
Subscribe to our newsletter on Substack. Go to our website. There's merch for you to buy. And we'll be back again next Tuesday with a brand new episode. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
That's sweet. It, folks.
Until then, thanks for listening.